A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 17, 1996, in the series The Will of God in Human Action, entitled Secure Enough to Forgive. The scripture readings are Psalm 137 and Luke 23, verses 26 through 34. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 137, verse 9, and Luke 23, verse 34. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The theme of this Lenten season was set at the first part of the year when an article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal triggered in me the fact that there are so many people in our world today that speak so confidently of God speaking to them, who speak so facilely of knowing exactly what the will of God is. And thinking about the Lenten pilgrimage of Jesus, I was struck by the contrast between that rather easy certainty and the struggle through which Jesus went to discern the will of God for his life and his mission. And so we began seeing Jesus' face set toward Jerusalem, steely will, with gracious heart. We noted that that came not without struggle, for in the wilderness he had wrestled with who he was and what God was calling him to be. Last week, Peter and Bob shared with you the fact that there's no doubt-free faith. Jesus himself at the end crying out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Next week in the garden, not my will, but thy will be done. And today this incredible prayer from the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I say an incredible prayer because it seems beyond human possibility. In the extremity of crucifixion, that such grace should flow from this one. And I would suggest to you this morning that it is only one who is very secure, deeply steeped in a sense of the will and purpose of God, that has the freedom to pray thus. It is only out of a sense of deep security that one could ever, I suspect, in the midst of that kind of horror, bless his enemies rather than curse them. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Those words, I suspect, as much as any in the gospel, move me and call me to follow Jesus. What an amazing expression of grace in the face of the hell of crucifixion. Rather than retaliate and strike out and lash out with anger, to pray for forgiveness for those that created his darkness. Hear me. It's only a very secure person that can do that. For the insecure are brittle. They are defensive. They lash out. They strike out. They use violence. They take things in their own hands. because they don't trust enough, aren't steeped enough in that eternal spirit that is moving all things. It takes security to be able to forgive one's enemies. And I want us for just a few moments this morning to let those words sink deeply into our being. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. We can sentimentalize the gospel. We can sentimentalize Jesus. We so easily put him at arm's length. We make him something other than we are and would like to lift him above our human experience as though somehow or other he didn't walk the way we walk. But I think we've got to see him in all of his tattered humanity, in all of the wrenching of his soul, in all of the struggle that he endured, and in the midst of that, finding the grace to forgive. That is divine. Jesus was a Jew. And it was not as though Jesus did not have in his background the words by which to curse those who were doing him in. And who of us would condemn him had he done so? Jesus was a Jew, and if I learned anything last week, I learned that the Psalter, the Jewish devotion, is based on the Psalter. One Jewish presenter on another psalm indicated that it's a part of the daily prayer. It's to be said three times over. And in an average lifetime, a pious and observant Jew will say it 70,000 times. Another Jewish scholar indicated that his old grandmother, who because she was a woman couldn't study Talmud, nevertheless, as was the case with the women, found their devotion in the Psalter, and his grandmother said the whole Psalter twice a week, a section every day, and then the whole Psalter on the Sabbath day, if you can believe it. If I learned anything last week, I learned that an observant Jew is a person of devotion and a person who is shaped and formed by the Psalter. And if 10% of the Psalter is constituted by this cursing of the enemy, then it was not as though Jesus did not have in his own formation the words by which to express and vent understandable anger and devastation at what was happening to him. It was quite a week to be in Jerusalem. I walked to the Institute, a 20-minute walk every day along bus line 18, the line in which two buses were blown up. At every block, at the bus stop shelters, there were two Israeli soldiers with their machine guns, block after block after block, on both sides of the street. One could not be in Jerusalem without sensing that terror which had stalked the streets so recently. And in the afternoon session in which we dealt with these imprecatory psalms, the Jewish presenter simply laid out the fact, number one, that the Psalms are there, and ways in which their harshness has been modified in various fashion. But then as we talked about it together, and the Jews are people of the book, if we think we're people of the book, they're people of the book. If it's in the canon, you deal with it. And they deal so much more honestly with it than we do. And so how do you deal with sounds of implication that call on God to curse your enemies? Well, if you live in Jerusalem today, and if you know people who have lost loved ones because of bombs exploding, if you live on the precipice of disaster every moment, you know what enemies are. You know what evil is. You walk through streets where the darkness stalks your steps. And in a very gentle and moving way, this Jewish scholar referred to the incident in January when the Palestinian bomber was finally tracked down by Israeli intelligence, and when he put his cellular phone to his ear, it exploded. And the man was honest enough to say, "How do I feel about that?" I was glad. I was glad it happened to him finally rather than to the victims for which his bombing was planned. But then he went on to read from another psalm that says, "I will rejoice when I bathe my feet in the blood of my enemy." And he said, "No, I can't pray that." And he would have said the same about Psalm 137 as we read it a few moments ago. And so we struggled together, Christians and Jews. What do you do with these psalms? One thing is true. The Jewish devotion is much more wholesome and healthy than ours. It allows everything to come into the presence of God. The Jew doesn't leave himself out in the street somewhere and come into the sanctuary and make out that he is something other than he is. All of his humanity is there. It all hangs out. All of the rage, all of the emotion comes into the community and finds expression before the face of God. That's rather healthy. And when language is given that allows emotion to be vented before the face of God and in the community, there is always that possibility of transformation, the release that brings freedom and issues finally in grace. But I say to you, as we wrestled with these awful statements that are a part of the Psalter, we did have to acknowledge that what comes to expression is not alien to any of us. And that before the darkness and the evil of the world, there is rage. And if we can't bring our whole humanity before the face of God, then our religion is truncated somehow. Then it's not real. Then it's not true. But that being the case, I'm all the more struck by the fact that Jesus was able, rather than to curse, to bless. And don't get the idea that imprecation is a Jewish custom and Christianity is forgiveness. That's ridiculous. Jesus was a Jew. Jesus was speaking out of his Jewishness. And it was in his Jewishness that somehow or other, in his experience of God, his resting in God, his steeping in God, his final security in God, that he found the freedom to forgive, rather than with vengeance to retaliate and to curse. Oh, the young man that killed the prime minister, he too was secure in God, a God that he claimed spoke to him. But you see, you really have to look at the fruits of it all, because out of that certainty that God was speaking to him, he took violence. He took the route of violence. He killed. He killed because of an ideology, because of a human system of ideas. The young man that went into the abortion clinic in New England, John Salvi, he too was acting according to the will of God, according to him. But what are the fruits of it? Again, it was an ideology. It was a human idea. And it was taking things in one's own hand, issuing in violence and destruction, darkness and evil. But there is a kind of resting in God. And we see it in Jesus. Not without struggle. Not without doubt. Not without intense wrenching of soul, but finally, coming to that place where when he was being crucified, he was able to extend grace rather than vengeance. And that, my friends, is an expression of an ultimate security, issuing in a marvelous freedom whose consequence is grace. And to that extent, Jesus is a model for us. Because you see, if the cross means anything, it means that one there absorbed the evil and absorbed the darkness and blessed rather than curse, thus breaking the cycle of violence that seems to continue to run unabated in our world. And while few of us will ever find that grace, nonetheless, we have the model. And while we cannot change the landscape of the earth, we can make a difference in those networks of which we are a part. Resting in the eternal God, secure, thereby finding the grace to forgive those who mean to do us in. That, I believe, is to follow Jesus. That, I believe, would be the will of God for us. God help us.